The Guardian.
I'm Sergei Dudarev, United Kingdom Atomic Energy Authority Cullen Laboratory, and it is UKA Euratom Fusion Association.
So let's start with the Twin Towers. What happened to the steel pillars in the Twin Towers?
The steel pillars lost strength. In other words, it lost the ability to support load in engineering terms, and at high temperatures it lost the steel, lost the ability to resist the stress imposed by the top parts of the building, and as a result the material lost shape and buckled, and the rest you've seen probably and remember seeing on television screens.
What temperature did this happen at? Is it surprising that it happened at this temperature?
Partially, it is not surprising because it's been known that steels of certain kinds, not all steels known to us, lose strength at temperatures of the order of 500 to 600 degrees centigrade, which are actually quite common in building fires. But in normal cases where fire occurs on small scale, the fire protection techniques protect the steel structures and they remain stable and nothing happens. Unfortunately, in the case of the Twin Towers, the impact knocked off the thermal insulation panels of the steel structures, and because of that they became exposed to fire, and therefore the temperature of these steel structures exceeded the limit at which they could be safely operated.
What is the melting point of steel, and is that higher than the temperatures experienced in building fires?
This is probably the most interesting aspect and non-trivial aspect of the event, because normal materials, butter or even metals like tungsten or vanadium or chromium, they also lose strength at high temperatures, but they only do this if the temperature approaches the melting temperature of the metal. In the case of iron, the melting temperature is 1540 or 1538 exactly degrees centigrade, and it is only because iron is a magnetic entity. The mechanical properties became affected by temperature at temperatures far below the melting temperature, which is very unusual. Only in iron or steels of the type similar to iron, those are affected by the loss of strength at relatively low temperatures. 500 degrees centigrade in this respect is a very low temperature, and this is why it is anomalous. And it is all due to magnetism related to the Curie temperature of iron, which is 770 degrees centigrade.
What is the Curie temperature of iron?
The Curie temperature of iron is 770 degrees centigrade. The Curie temperature is a characteristic temperature at which the long-range magnetic order disappears because the moments rotate in all sorts of directions, and at certain temperature the long-range order, magnetic order, vanishes. When this happens, soon afterwards, at temperature approximately 911.5 degrees centigrade, the loss of magnetic order gives rise to another event, the so-called alpha-gamma phase transition, where iron transforms from BCC to FCC, from body-centered cubic to face-centered cubic face, and it is this transition driven by magnetism that has the impact on mechanical properties, even at temperatures much lower than the phase transition temperature itself. It's like a precursor or the tail, low-temperature tail of the phase transition, which resulted in the unfortunate loss of strength and generally undesirable changes in mechanical properties.
So blacksmiths, for example, have known about this property of iron for a long time, and generally that this property has been known about. What's really new here? How have people tried to solve the problem in the past, and where has your new approach come from?
I'm sure that blacksmiths, when they forge the objects that they're interested in, probably never think of magnetism as the actual fundamental mechanism or process that they work with. When you alter the temperature of a piece of iron, you look at mechanical properties alone, and the fact that they are in fact fundamentally affected and entirely affected by magnetic properties, you miss it if you are a blacksmith. However, if you are interested in the question of how you want, what you need to do, if you want to design a different type of material, steel that, for example, doesn't lose mechanical strength or has certain properties which you design for specific applications, you definitely need to look at the microscopic structure. You need to look at microscopic mechanisms in the same way as in medicine, in order to address and cure a patient, to address the cause of the disease, you look at the microscopic processes, the microscopic organisms, viruses or bacteria. In the same way here, in order to address the issue of mechanical properties, you look at microscopic objects, dislocations, defects, and magnetism fundamentally.
And what you're saying is that people in the past they knew about this phenomenon, but they hadn't thought to look into the magnetic properties in order to try to understand it.
Absolutely. Never before the issue about the link between magnetism, which is a quantum mechanical phenomenon, and dislocations, which are carriers of mechanical deformation, never before this link was even addressed or even questioned or investigated. That is the new aspect of the work, which came from a general methodology known in current material science as multi-scale modeling. It is a concept where you investigate and link effects and behavior occurring at various spatial and temporal scales in order to explain a macroscopic phenomenon or macroscopic effect.
So let's move on now to applications. There are applications in the construction of nuclear power stations. Can you tell us about those?
The research that has led to the new understanding of mechanical properties is a part of a fusion program, fusion materials research program, which is an EU-wide undertaking involving our colleagues from many countries: Switzerland, Germany, France, ourselves, of course. This is a generic materials science field where we look both at properties of fusion materials, how to improve and design better materials, and of course it is a part of an even bigger field of nuclear materials related to advanced fission nuclear power generation.
So the problem in a power station is presumably you have very high temperatures, and that's the basic problem you're trying to solve, is it, with these new steels?
There are two important problems, and one aspect is related to radiation resistance of materials, and another is high temperatures. The type of steels that was used in Twin Towers, the general class, is highly resistant to radiation. It is similar to what is used in nuclear industry. At the same time, we want to design materials that would remain stable and strong at high temperatures, and that is the objective of our current research.
And how expensive do you think it would be to produce new steels along these lines, and how long do you think this process would take before they actually can come into general use?
Currently, we are not looking at expensive options, and it is more currently a question of taking a broader approach and investigating probably quite simple methods of changing the properties, which are not expensive at all in relative terms. However, generally that the issue of costs may not necessarily be the most important one, because the part of a reactor exposed to high temperature represents a very small part of the overall structure, and therefore the cost of those steel objects that are exposed to a high temperature, in fact, is negligible in comparison with the overall cost of a reactor.
For more discussion and analysis, download Guardian Daily. That's the Guardian's news podcast, available first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.